everyone, Siobhan Chapman here, and welcome to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. For today, we will continue with our monthly fixed income conversation as we will review the latest edition of the Fixed Income Strategist publication, which is titled The Slow Turn, the Quarter 2 Outlook. Joining us for the conversation, I'm glad to welcome back the publication's lead author, Leslie Falconio, the head of taxable fixed income strategy for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. Leslie, welcome back.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Of course. So let's get started. In this month's edition of the Fixed Income Strategist, you spend some time reflecting on quarter one performance, as well as outline expectations for quarter two. So let's begin with quarter one. How did performance fare relative to your expectations at the start of the year?
There are certain events that have happened that we expected, and I'll admit there are certain things that happened that we were surprised about. So when we think about how the end of the year, that November, December actually sort of unfolded, we had a situation where the 10-year Treasury yield had moved from a 5.01 in October 23 down to a 3.73 in December. And this was mainly driven by the fact that the market was pricing in about 170 basis points of cuts for 2024. And because of this rally and because of the cut expectation, financial conditions really started to loosen, and we saw risk assets do incredibly well in November, December. Now, it was our expectation that the first quarter, the market would more than likely, and actually we were fairly confident about this because we felt the 170 basis points of cuts was way overdone, they would price out the cuts and interest rates would rise in the first quarter. I started in the beginning of the year in January. I wrote a 4.25 as a top in 10-year yield. But by the end of January, we saw some stronger than expected number. We moved that forecast to the 10-year yield would move to 4.50 in the first quarter. So now that we're sitting around that 4.60, I'm pleased with the interest rate side of it. What I didn't expect, however, was that given our view that the market would unwind the overzealous cuts that they put in and the fact that we anticipated interest rates to rise, that sort of loosening of financial conditions that we saw in the last 2 months of the year as it pertains to risk assets and fixed income, especially those with higher credit embedded securities, my expectation was that they would start to widen out a little bit simply because they did so well in November and December, and because we thought a rise in rates, a removal of cuts, which is less of accommodation, we thought opportunistically, more than likely risk assets would spreads would widen, and they didn't. They did the exact opposite. So what you saw from a lot of these risk assets is that the momentum that they carried in November and December followed through in the first quarter, even though interest rates went up by 80 basis points, even though the market said, okay, Fed, you're not going 170 cuts, you're going 40. They still weren't resilient enough. Now, when looking back, there's certain reasons that one, I mean, we have an equity market that did exceptionally well, and a lot of those, you know, credit embedded sectors have a higher correlation to equity. Two, we recognize that there is a lot of cash on the sidelines and people want to put some money to work and earn those yields. So, you know, when we say like where we were right, our interest rate call was right. Our high quality risk assets did fine, but that lower credit quality that we've been neutral on, really did well, much better than what we thought.
So now let's turn to quarter two. What are your performance expectations for fixed income assets?
Yeah, when we look into the second quarter, I mean, now we have to say, okay, I have, you know, embedded risk assets from a spread perspective are very, very tight, right? So if we look at some of these percentiles over the past, say, 15 years, you know, a lot of them are in the 20th percentile, meaning that 80% of the time over the past 20 years, spreads have been wider than they are today. But on the other side of that, you have yields that are in the 90th percentile, meaning that over the past 20 years, yields have only been higher 10% of the time where they are now. So we know that a lot of the performance driver within spread product are going to be from yields, right? And that's really the tailwind to total return. It's not spreads that really is a tailwind to total returns. It's yields. It's your compounding income. So one of the things that we're seeing now, particularly given the fact that those assets that have a higher correlation or link to the 10-year Treasury, which has experienced a lot of interest rate volatility in the first quarter, as we thought, have not performed as well as some of those lower credit-bedded sectors who don't really show that mark-to-market every day. They kind of, you know, move around a little bit, and then all of a sudden, 1 or 2 days, you'll see these dramatic moves. So we have these high-quality sectors that continuously, particularly on the residential mortgage side, agency MBS, CMBS, RMBS, that still look very, very attractive. Now, CMBS has been a really credible sector of performance in the first quarter, particularly things like BBB CMBS, which is like the highest performing asset in fixed income. But they're still wide, right? Because their performance in 2023 didn't have kind of that end of the year catch up as much as we saw within corporate credit side, whether it was IG or high yield. So when we think about going forward, these higher quality sectors that have had that higher correlation to volatility and tenure have tightened, but not tightened as much as we've seen from others. And you're still able to earn a lot of this carry in terms of your compounding income at a time when we believe going into the second quarter, you know, we're not looking for hard landings, of course, but we do think the economy will slow. We do think that interest rates will start to trend lower by the end of the year, you know, which is only because we do believe that the Fed cuts this year. And so what we're looking at is still sort of that high quality sector. We've been long, which have done very well for us, these 5-year tips, because our expectation at the end of the year was the market wasn't quite pricing in enough inflation, and nor was it our expectation that we'd meet the Fed target of 2% by the end of the year. They've done well. We're going to keep that on for now, and we might make some adjustments a little bit to the tips market, but we like the tips also. So we think that going forward in the second quarter, we're going to have a little bit of clarity. And one of the things we have to really look at now is that the June Fed meeting will have a new SEP, right? And so when we think about going into that summary of economic projections that the Fed will have, given the strength that we've seen, the market is going to be a little bit volatile still in the second quarter, because they're going to look for whether or not the Fed alters its projections that it made in March, given the fact we've seen a little bit stronger and consistent inflation more than they originally expected.
I want to expand a little bit on your mentioning of the Fed. I understand CIO recently adjusted its outlook for Fed rate cuts in 2024. Can you expand on that for us?
Yeah, I mean, right now we have two rate cuts starting, one starting in September. And, you know, this has been, as we know, this has been a difficult year for not only economists, but people try and forecast economic numbers because the actual prints have continuously gone above consensus. But a lot of this data is very clouded, so it makes it difficult to be, you know, to project these numbers for these economists and some of these strategists correctly. And it's known that we have this post-pandemic paradigm where these rise in interest rates that we've seen over the past year has obviously been a headwind to things like the housing market, given the fact how high mortgage rates are, but it really hasn't curtailed demand as much as what was it expected. So when people talk about is the Fed policy restrictive enough, even though it's very high, the answer is, you know, it's restrictive, you know, but what we're seeing is this continuous strength in consumer demand. And we think the consumer stays strong. We just think demand's going to wane a bit in the second half. And that's why we have those cuts priced in. I mean, we still have, you know, GDP, you know, healthy in the fact that it's going to be above trend, and maybe it's around 2% by the end of the year, maybe a little bit higher. But the point is the trend will be lower. And our expectation also is that when we see these higher inflation numbers that are caused by things such as auto insurance and owner's equivalent rents, we all know that there's a lot of nuances in these calculations that is overinflating, you know, no pun intended, you know, some of these numbers, and the fact that, you know, more than likely they're going to converge, right? So we think that some of the measurement issues that we're seeing in rents will come down in the second half. Some of the issues that we're seeing in auto insurance will come down in the second half. And more importantly, we're seeing wages actually, while still elevated, they're coming down. So our expectation is that the Fed still cuts twice this year. I mean, this is from, obviously, we had much more healthy cuts in the beginning of the year. But it is one where we do think the growth slows, inflation comes down. But again, it doesn't slow to a point we have a point of concern for risk assets. And it doesn't slow to a point of concern that we think we're going to have a hard landing. But we just think the market is going to, you know, trend lower. But the key to the fixed income market right now is that this is a show me market. They have to see it. And unfortunately, given the cloudiness of this data and some of the, you know, the variance that we've seen from expectation and actual prints, they haven't seen it yet. But once they do start to see it, which we do believe they will, you get this trend lower.
So we are coming to the end of our conversation, Leslie, and I want to turn to positioning for a moment. Can you remind us of CIO's current allocation preferences within fixed income?
Yeah, I mean, I think for the fixed income side, you know, fixed income has been to a situation where higher quality assets have lagged, you know, the first quarter in terms of lower quality. We don't want to, and we do think some of these lower quality assets, such as high yield preferreds, are actually kind of tight now and spread. Now, we want to stay neutral those because we appreciate the carry. We do. We appreciate the carry. We appreciate the fact that, you know, you're going to earn a lot of compounding income on this, but we do expect pockets of vulnerability within those sectors, not a catalyst, but just simply a better opportunity to add than what we're seeing right now. Now, so we're going to stick with the higher quality, and that's going to be things like agency mortgage-backed securities, which are AAA. You don't have credit. You don't have the credit risk. You know, IG, which, by the way, we do think are tight, but we're going to take that carry in that sector. We are expecting them to widen a little, but nothing that is a material drag on performance. We still like the TIPS market, given the fact that, you know, we have some uncertainty regarding the Fed, and obviously there's a lot of spotlighted geopolitical risk in oil, so we're going to go long those TIPS. So we actually like and CMBS as well. CMBS has been a sector we've had. It's done very well. We're going to keep that on because the performance in 2023 was such a drag that it's still cheap to other sectors. So we still have this high quality bias on. We still have this, you know, this view that you could take carry, earn compounding income from higher quality sectors right now. We stay neutral in the higher credit embedded sectors, looking for a better opportunity to add. We're not going to sell them, but we're just going to be neutral to them. And again, by, you know, the end of the year, we are looking for yields to drop. So that's really our overall trend here. But there's one of the things that we've said is that although our expectation for interest rates was going to rise in the first quarter, and I'm pleased with that, the call that we made, we also sort of, you know, made caveats to the risk of the call. Like if we get some reinflation number that no one's expecting because oil goes to 105 and stays there, right? Doesn't just go there, but it has to be sustained, or there's some reinflation that we're not expecting. That's when we're going to have to readdress our long-term interest rate call. We're not going to do that simply based on, you know, two or three numbers in the short term that has, you know, surprised the market, but still the long-term trend is lower.
Leslie, thank you so much for joining us today and keeping our listeners and clients informed about your thinking around fixed income and positioning.
Thanks very much.
Again, today we have been joined by Leslie Falconio, the head of taxable fixed income strategy for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. Leslie has been referencing the April edition of the Fixed Income Strategist publication, which is titled The Slow Turn, The Quarter Two Outlook. The publication is now available on ubs.com/CIO, though for clients of UBS, you may reach out to your UBS financial advisor to receive a copy directly. From UBS Studios, I'm Siobhan Chapman, and thank you for joining us.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.